It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Trump administration recently unveiled new dietary guidelines, changing the food pyramid to put protein, healthy fats, and vegetables at the top.
Portions of the guidelines have gotten praised. For instance, the Wisconsin Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics said they support the move to avoid highly processed foods and refined carbohydrates.
But the organization and other nutritionists have raised concerns about the emphasis on foods high in saturated fat, like red meat, beef tallow, and butter.
To understand these changes to the dietary guidelines, we have Michelle King Reimer, a registered dietitian and clinical assistant professor at the Zilber College of Public Health at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Michelle, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Absolutely. Thank you for inviting me.
Before we start digging into the specifics of these guidelines, what are these guidelines? Where do they come from?
So the dietary guidelines for Americans are updated every 5 years. They are science-based recommendations, and truly they're meant to be a guide, kind of like a playbook for policies and program and schools and healthcare and individuals, rather than to be something that's specific to each individual. So this means that they shape federal nutrition programs like school meals and WIC, and ultimately policy follows this guidance. So it's really important for it to be clear.
We got an email question from J.O. who asks, what evidence and analysis lead to changes in dietary guidelines?
I love the question. So as I mentioned, the dietary guidelines are meant to be evidence-based, and they do truly shape how science is interpreted, summarized, and translated. And so until this cycle, the dietary guidelines followed a consistent pattern. So there was an independent advisory committee with nutrition experts. They would review the evidence, produce a scientific report, and then federal agencies would translate that report into policy. And so this really allowed for a clear boundary between scientific judgment and policy authority. I think a good example of that is thinking of it being similar to the separation of church and state. In the 2025-2030 cycle, the process changed. So although the advisory committee, those 20 nutrition experts, completed its report, the USDA and Department of Health and Human Services didn't use that report as primary scientific foundation. They relied on a separate scientific foundation built around, I would say, a different hierarchy of evidence while selectively incorporating conclusions from that expert panel.
We'll dig into some of the what those distinctions mean in a minute. But again, big picture for these guidelines, part of the challenge here isn't just, if I understand it correctly, hey, here's the latest science, but how do we communicate what we know from the latest research in a way that people can look at this and take action and work it into their daily diet? Is that an important part of these recommendations?
Absolutely. And I believe as well as just, again, emphasizing that the recommendations should be clear, evidence-based, and easy for the public to understand. But where we see the biggest profound impacts is in those federal nutrition programs such as school meals, school lunches.
So now let's get into these guidelines. You suggested that, hey, the process was different here and that led to some different outcomes. What are some of the things that have concerned you, first of all, when it comes to the messaging you're seeing around these guidelines?
Sure. Well, I think it's important to just highlight that there are many guidelines that haven't changed, right? Balance, variety, moderation continue to be key. And those align with the messaging that you should consume a large amount or, you know, consume a lot of fruits and vegetables, whole grains, lean proteins, healthy fats, in addition to limiting that added sugar, saturated fats, and excess sodium. So those things are still recommendations that were pulled over from the last 5 year cycle. What I'm seeing are some shifts that potentially the messaging isn't clear or consistent with what is actually based in decades worth of literature, or also within the actual dietary guidelines themselves. One is the increase in protein recommendations. So recommendations now are about twice what was previously recommended in terms of protein intake. And while we know that protein needs are highly variable, most Americans are consuming more than enough protein. And consuming excess protein can still be converted to fat in your body, which ultimately leads to weight gain. So what's missing there is this clarity on the quality of different protein foods. And we know evidence continues to suggest plant-based proteins and fish are associated with more favorable outcomes than diets that are high in red meat. So when we eat a lot of high protein foods, we also get everything that comes alongside of that, correct? Like fats and fiber and sodium. So I like to think of it as this protein package. And that package is what likely makes the difference for health. If you, let's say you were going to have 4 ounces of sirloin steak, you will get about 33 grams of protein, and about 5 grams of that would be saturated fat. If you were then on the flip side going to consume a plant-based protein, so a cup of cooked lentils, you would get less protein, so about 18 grams of protein for that serving, but you also get 15 grams of fiber and virtually no saturated fat. So that protein package is what likely really makes that difference for our health.
On the topic of protein, we got an email from Dale who writes, hey, protein is very important, and there are, as you were just getting at, non-meat sources of protein. In the guidelines that we're getting now from the federal government and the way they're talking about them, is there enough emphasis, do you think, on those non-meat proteins, the lentils and things like that you just mentioned?
Correct. I would say, again, the language exists, right, that there are sources of meat and there's also plant sources to get protein. However, the order in which it's presented within within the guidelines is it mentions meat and dairy first and then mentions plant-based proteins. Again, there's a bit of a mixed message if you even then consider looking at the new pyramid, is that meat, steak, dairy has been elevated to the top of the pyramid where you should, the visual tells you you should eat more of. And then you see the plant-based proteins are actually below that. So from a visual standpoint, it can be confusing to the consumer as well.
I wanted to talk about that upside-down pyramid because I'm a little baffled by it compared to what we've seen, the upright pyramid or the plate of food that was in a couple cycles there. There's an upside-down pyramid. I mean, just visually glancing at it without looking at any of the information that came along with it, if I look at it, I would look at it and say, hey, whole grain's down on the bottom under a line. I shouldn't eat whole grain. I don't think that's the message they're trying to send exactly. What do you make of that part of the visual communication of these guidelines?
Yes. Well, I would say that when visuals send mixed messages, then people are less likely to act on the guidance, and it also erodes trust. But what I would also say is that, you know, the fundamentals of healthy eating haven't changed nearly as much as the graphic suggests. So again, having that mixed messaging can confuse and erode trust. But the guidelines are not as different as the pyramid would suggest.
We're talking about new dietary guidelines from the federal government. Michelle King-Reimer is with us, clinical assistant professor at the Zilber College of Public Health in UW-Milwaukee, registered dietitian. Michelle, one of the guidelines here, not too controversial, I think, is, hey, cut back on processed foods, ultra-processed foods. I think everybody in the nutrition world agrees on that. But how do we define, can we define what we mean when we say processed and ultra-processed foods?
Yes, there is a classification system that exists. It's called the NOVA classification system, and it categorizes foods into 4 groups based on their level of processing. And this classification helps us in understanding the nutritional quality and the health implications of different food types. So the new guidelines, I think, yes, you're correct. We can get behind reducing process, ultra-processed foods. I think we need more clarity around this and to look at ultra-processed foods as maybe not forbidden, but as foods to be mindful of in our frequency and also in our portion.
Right. I think one of the things that can be safe to say in the nutrition world is we're never going to see guides that says, hey, eat more chips and store-bought pastries and stuff like that. Much as I would love to see that guidance, we're pretty rock solid. We're never going to see these listed as the good foods on the pyramid, right?
Well, I would never say never based off of some of the images that are presented on our pyramid now. But I would agree with you is that reducing ultra-processed foods is an important step. And continuing to emphasize limiting added sugars is critical. We just need to make sure that our recommendations are clear, evidence-based, and easy for our public to understand.
All right, now we've talked about ultra-processed foods. We've talked some about protein. Carbohydrates, there are different kinds of carbohydrates. They kind of get a bad rap in a lot of ways, especially based on some particular diets. What do you see in the new recommendations in carbohydrates? What do you actually suggest to people when it comes to the world of carbs?
This is a very pertinent question I get asked a lot. Are carbs bad? But I would say really another confusing element is how whole grains are visually represented. So decades of research have shown that whole grains are associated with lower risk of heart disease and diabetes and certain cancers. So the current visual, they appear at the bottom of the pyramid or the plate, and people may interpret that as eat less, even if that wasn't the intent. So when you choose whole grains, you want to make sure that you are choosing just what it says, whole grains, not the ultra-processed white flour types of foods, chips, cookies, candies, things like that, but actually choosing those grains that provide fiber and vitamins and minerals.
I've seen out there, speaking of fiber, I've seen articles saying, hey, 2026 in the nutrition world may be the year of fiber. A lot more people recommending that. Of course, dietitians and nutritionists, I think, have been trying to get Americans to eat more fiber for many, many years. What is your advice for people when it comes to fiber? And do these new guidelines talk enough about the value of fiber?
Yes, the guidelines do mention increasing fiber, and I think that's consistent with the message to eat whole foods in terms of consuming fruits and vegetables and plant-based proteins such as legumes and nuts and seeds, along with whole grains. And so I believe you're right. Most people do not consume enough fiber. My students always keep me up to date on the newest TikTok trends. And recently, one of those was more of a fiber loading trend. So again, as you increase fiber in your diet, just make sure that you are also increasing water as well.
I want to return to something we touched on earlier, saturated fats. You mentioned, you know, in that red meat, if you're eating that to get your protein, you're getting some saturated fats. I think some of the oils, the beef tallow and things like that, that at least the Secretary of Health and Human Services is recommending, are going to come with saturated fat. Now, as I understand it, please correct me if I'm wrong, the words in these guidelines don't necessarily say, hey, eat more saturated fats than you used to. Some of the messaging, though, seems to say, hey, maybe they're not as bad as we used to say. What are you seeing there?
That's correct. The words that are written, you know, what within the guidelines indicate that you should limit your saturated fat consumption to no more than 10% of daily calories. However, one concern many nutrition scientists share is that decades of high quality research that consistently link higher saturated fat intake to increase cardiovascular risk has just kind of disappeared. And so when the visual or the recommendation appears to soften that message, especially by elevating foods that are traditionally high in saturated fat to the top of that pyramid, it can create confusion for the public. So I think it's important to think about, the scientific debate exists, but the weight of evidence still supports limiting saturated fat as a heart healthy strategy. Another, as it pertains to saturated fat, the new recommendations also suggest consuming full fat dairy. However, that's inconsistent with the recommendation to stay below 10% of your daily calories if you are consuming the recommended servings of dairy per day. So I believe that it would be difficult to stay below 10% of your daily calories from saturated fat if you consume 3 full fat versions of dairy per day. For example, if you had, 1 cup of whole milk, 3/4 cup of full fat Greek yogurt, and 1 ounce of cheese, you're already at 17 grams of saturated fat. And if we're considering this for a 2000 calorie a day diet, you're almost to your limit of 22 grams per day. So if you add a single tablespoon of butter or beef tallow that has been suggested as an option, you're going to overconsume saturated fat for that day.
Now, as a classic Wisconsinite, I'll have anywhere from 3 to 7 different kinds of cheese in my fridge at a time. But, I'm not eating them a block at a time. That's where that moderation comes in, right? A little bit of these things, if we're not having full servings, might not be such a disaster.
Absolutely. Moderation is key. It's important to recognize that full fat dairy fits within your diet, depending on the other types of foods that you're consuming throughout the day. But we should also keep in mind that low-fat dairy remains a practical, evidence-based way to reduce saturated fat and calories. And really, ultimately, regardless of fat level, added sugar in dairy products matter just as much.
Finally, I hear in the public a lot of confusion, I think, when it comes to, well, wait, what am I supposed to eat? What are my dietary guidelines? I'm guessing as a dietitian, you hear that even more. What is the biggest point of confusion you hear from people that you'd want to, having this platform, that you'd want to clear up for them?
Well, my advice is to focus less on any single graphic and more on a consistent theme that hasn't changed, and that's eat plenty of fruits and vegetables, choose whole grains often, include a variety of protein sources, limit added sugars, and also be mindful of saturated fat. And those principles are still strongly supported by decades of research. But ultimately, healthy eating should support enjoyment, energy, and the quality of your life, not be stressful.
Michelle, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Michelle King-Reimer is a clinical assistant professor at the Zilber College of Public Health at UW-Milwaukee. We've been talking about a new food pyramid and new nutrition guidelines from the federal government.